We are holding on Vav Amud Bey's four line, the fourth line from the end of the narrow lines. Okay. We mentioned in the previous part of the Gemara, we mentioned yesterday that the Torah gives us a limud that milk from camels or other non-kosher animals is aser. We had a chance of chamim. We learn it from the fact that it says twice gomel, that the gomel is also once in Shmini and once in Re'e. And according to Shimon, we learn it from the fact that it says es ha-gomel, where es implies something that's secondary to the camel. So now the question is, so in the course of the discussion, we mentioned that there's a bit of a chiddush in the fact that milk from kosher animals should be mutter anyway, and therefore we would have thought that milk from non-kosher animals is, and therefore we need a special pasuk to tell us otherwise. So now the question becomes, where indeed do we know that milk from kosher animals is mutter? Now, Shitim Kubetis points out, on the face of it, we could answer that the answer is we find Avraham Avinu served his guests, the three malachim, milk. He served them cream and milk. So the answer is maybe it's only allowed to be in Noyah. Right. So the question is, how do we know it's also to us Jews? Ilema b'de'osa rachmana basa b'cholav. Is it because the Torah says that basa b'cholav is aser, implying holochude shore, implying that milk by itself would be mutter, or meat by itself would be mutter? Maybe not. Ve'ema cholav l'chude osa b'achilo mutter b'ana. Maybe when the milk is by itself, you're still not allowed to eat it, let's say, but you are allowed to have ana from it. But then if you cook meat with it, b'hanah nami also, then it becomes also b'hanah as well. There's no clear proof that it would be mutter b'achila before you mix it with meat. Right. Well, the point is we see that b'asa b'cholav is also b'hanah, but maybe in other words, cholav by itself is mutter b'hanah, but it's still also tea. That's what we're asking. Ulur of Shimon b'shari b'hanah. What about according to Reb Shimon, who we learned in Cholin learns that basa b'cholav is actually mutter b'ana. So according to him, what would be the difference between basa b'cholav or cholav without basar? Fine, mashkachas lola, milki al b'sholei. He would still say there's a difference. You could say there's a difference, according to him. If you were to cook basa b'cholav together, you get malkas just for the cooking alone. But either way, you'd be also to eat it. And it would be mutter b'ana. Milki al b'sholei, to get malkas for you. So we still don't have a solid proof. If you cook it, then you'd be high of malchus. So maybe according to Reb Shimon, that's what the Torah is telling us by basa b'cholav. In other words, we would argue, cholav by itself is also to eat, and it's mutter b'ana. If you cook it with meat, it's also to eat, mutter b'ana, according to Reb Shimon. What is being added by the issur of basa b'cholav, the fact that you get malchus for cooking it. So that's not a proof that milk is mutter. Now, element of gali rachmona b'psulei amukdashin, rather, we can say like this, because the Torah tells us when it comes to psulei amukdashin, an animal that was supposed to be brought as a korban and then became possible because it got a mum or whatever, the pasuk says tizbach, that you're allowed to shecht it, from which we learn v'loy giza, but you're not allowed to shear it, to shear off the wool. And basar, and when the pasuk says, the pasuk says tizbach ha'chal to basar, you can shecht it and you can eat the meat. So the words tizbach and ve'achal to basar, tizbach teaches us that you're not allowed to shear it. Basar means v'loy cholav. When it says you're allowed to eat the meat, implies that you're not allowed to eat the milk.
The question is, implying
just the opposite. Hod cholin shari, implying had it been a cholin animal, it would have been mutter. Since the Torah has to tell us it's prohibited by kodshim, maybe that implies that's mutter by cholin. But you could still argue ve'ema de cholin also ba'achil of shari ba'na. Still, you could argue the same logic as before. Maybe even milk of cholin animals is also to eat. It's just mutter b'ana. To kodshim b'ana nami also. And then when it comes to kodshim, there's an additional issue that it's also b'ana as well. So still no proof from there. Okay. Ela medichtiv, fine. We've run out of psukim in Torah for the moment. Let's do a pasuk from Mishlei. The day chalev even lalach mecha walachem be'secha. The pasuk says there will be enough goat's milk for your food and for the food of your household, v'chayim l'na'ar esecha, and life for your girls, your maidservants or your daughters or whatever. In other words, which seems to be implying that you're allowed to drink milk.
Of goats.
Well, once you have of goats, then of any animal. But the dilma l'schor, of any kosher animal. but the dumah l'schora, maybe the pasuk doesn't mean you're allowed to drink it. Maybe it just means you're allowed to sell it and use the proceeds for other, you sell it to goyim, let's say, and you use the proceeds to buy, and you use the proceeds to buy food for your household. There's still no proof that it says that you're allowed to eat it. Okay, elam adichtiv. Okay, so let's try another pasuk. In Shmuel, it describes over there the story when the Jewish people are fighting against Goliath, against the Plishtim, and you have Goliath coming over there every day and making fun of the Jewish people and claiming nobody can beat him, etc. Then you have then the pasuk describes how one day Yishai tells David to take some food to go check out how his brothers are faring. His oldest three brothers are in the army. Go see how they're doing, bring them some food, bring back stuff from them, whatever. And Yishai tells them that bring them these 10 cheeses for them, the pasta for them. Harite cholov means cheese. So therefore, I don't know, but the word harite cholov means cheese. So Yishai is telling David, actually, that Rashi brings from the pasuk over there, that Yishai is telling David the cheese you should bring to the Sar Ha'el, to the captain of the thousand, to the captain of the unit of a thousand in the army to which your brothers belong. Anyway, the point is, the pashtus is bringing them the cheese to eat. But again, once the cheese, then you're allowed milk. But the question is, v'dumah l'schora. Okay, still, you could argue the same thing, like with the previous pasuk from Mishlei. Maybe it means he's supposed to bring it to them so that they can sell it to local goyim and then buy other food with the money. And what do you mean, v'dumah l'schora? V'dumah l'schora. In wartime, you know, you're not doing trading. If there, who are the goyim around there? The Plishtim. You're not going to go trading with the enemy. So that would be a solid proof, therefore. Okay, but Yishai is not going to be sending cheese with David for that purpose. So that's a solid proof that you're allowed to eat cheese, and therefore that you're allowed to drink milk. Another possibility is you do have a pasuk from the Torah, after all. The pasuk describes Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Zavah Chol HaVadvash, it's a land that flows with milk and honey. The Eloi D'Shari. Now, if milk were not something that was mutter to drink, would the pasuk be praising Eretz Yisrael for something that you can't even use for its normal purpose of drinking it? So it must be that it's mutter. The Iboyah Seyma Mehafa, or another possibility you could learn from here, from Pasuk in Yeshaya, the Navi is calling to the Jewish people to learn Torah. And he says to them, L'chu shivru ve'echalu, come buy and eat. L'chu shivru v'lekesef v'lemechir yayin v'cholav, come buy, you want us to pay money, you want us to pay a price, wine and milk. So again, you see, then the Nimshal is telling them to learn Torah, which is compared to wine and milk. The point is, we see in the Mashal that he's using, that he's comparing the Torah, so he's comparing it to milk, and he's saying, L'chu shivru ve'echalu, come buy and eat. So obviously, both the wine and okay, but nevertheless, the fact that he's using the expression ve'echolu, and then he says cholov, implies that in the Mashal also it has to be that you're able to eat and drink milk. So therefore, so that's another proof that milk is mutter.
Stretched proofs, why the Torah comes straightforward?
Okay, because the Torah left it for other psukim. So with that said, actually, there was an interesting point Chassam Sofer makes. Before, we were asking the question that maybe possibly milk should be considered in a certain sense Eva Menachai. Not true Eva Menachai, but it does come from a living creature. So he wants to say, as far as that, and also Tosfos discusses over here the question, what about eggs? Do we have a source in the Torah that you're allowed to eat eggs? And one answer is, not over here actually, Tosfos talks about it elsewhere, one proof you're allowed to eat eggs, whether at the end of Cholim we have the mitzvah of Shavuot HaKan, the Shaleach HaShalach HaTaim VeHaBonim TikachLoch, and you're taking them in order to eat. So obviously eggs must be mutter to eat. But the Chassam Sofer says, on the face of it, if we only have Psukim saying that in the Torah implying that we're allowed to eat them, maybe they still remain also to Bnei Noach. So he wants to argue that maybe indeed a Yid is not allowed to sell or give milk or eggs to a goy, because it would be lefnevir. Again, not Eva Menachai, but Yosef Menachai, whatever. The point is that the Chai is Osir. Bnei Noach are also not allowed to eat something that comes from a Chai, whether Eva or Bosser, or in this case. So therefore, he argues that maybe we should say it's Osir to them as well. Other Achronim talk about that and disagree on various grounds, one of them being that we have a concept that we mentioned in a few places in the Gemara, that it's impossible something should be osir to Bnei Noach and mutter to Jewish people, so if it's mutter to us, it must be mutter to them as well. You also have the proof from Avraham Avinu serving the guests milk. So the halacha is the accepted halacha is that there's no issue that you're allowed to sell milk and eggs to goyim.
So the main source
we said is either from the fact that Erez Gavah Cholav Dvash or the pasuk in Yishaya. Also, well, we have three. We have one second. Okay, it's not a matter of halacha. It's kind of gilui milta ba'alma. So we had a reason to think that maybe it's also what we see. Since he's clearly mentioning milk as being something that you're allowed to drink, then it shows that it's mutter. So we had that, and we also had the pasuk with David bringing cheese to the army commander. Okay, fine. Okay, well, nevertheless, there's still proofs. Okay, fine. Okay, now at the top of the Amud, we said that Rav Shimon and the Chachamim are both learning things from the fact that it says Gomel twice. Again, it mentions the kosher and non-kosher animals. Well, it mentions the simonim of them in Parashas Shmini, and then it mentions the four animals that have only one simon. Then it repeats the whole thing in Parashas Re'eh. So therefore, the Gomel is mentioned in both cases, in both places.
Right.
So
in
Shmini and in Re'eh. So Rav Shimon learns from that if you have a Gomel-like creature that's born to a Parah, then it's also a Nidna. And the Chachamim disagree with that. They say it's Mutter, but they say that you learn from the sect from the true time of Gomel that the milk of a camel is also just like a camel itself. So now the question becomes, getting back to that, Elamayata, by that logic, if you're going to tell me we're learning something, either the Chachamim or of Shimon are learning something from the fact that it's a twice Gomel, what about Shofon, Shofon, Arneves, Chazir, Chazir, Lahani Udasu? Then you would have to say that the...
they're all said in different parts.
Yeah, all of those four animals are mentioned in Shmini and mentioned again in Re'eh. So you're going to say that these are all coming to teach us this limud. You don't need the repetition of four animals to teach us these dinim. No, rather we have to say, what's the reason why that whole section, including the names of these four animals, is mentioned again, as we learn in a braisa. Lama nishnu bebehema, why was the list of animals that have only one simen repeated? Because in Parshas Re'eh you have something new that you didn't have mentioned in Parshas Shmini, namely the shesua. The Pesach uses the expression umimafrisei haparis ashsua. So in the simple sense, it means from those that have split hooves but they're not fully split. However, the Gemara over here, and also in Cholin and in other places, explains that the shsua is actually a creature that has shnei gabin or shnei shadrois, we learned about in Cholin, that has two backs and two spinal cords, which either means that it's a deformed animal, like a Siamese twin, or it means it's a species of animal that has like a deep groove down its back or something, and therefore it looks like it has shnei gabin or shnei shadrois. The Malbim, for example, identifies it as some creature that lives in a creature called a peccary, I think, or whatever, that lives in South America. Anyway, the point is that so the whole list of animals was repeated because in Parshas Re'eh it also mentions the Shesua over Oifus Mipnei Ra, and then the whole list of non-kosher birds is repeated because in Parshas Re'eh it also mentions the Ra, which we learned actually in Cholin. We had a whole discussion about it. We ended up saying the Ra is not actually a separate type of bird, but it's another name for the same bird, and we want to clarify that the bird is also no matter what name you call it. So the point is, therefore, so now we have a general rule that you can have an entire parsha in the Torah that was repeated only because of one chiddush in it. So therefore, so not necessarily is there anything that we're meant to learn from the repetitions of Gomel and the other three animals. We're only repeating them because of the Shesua and because of the Ra. So why are you telling me?
The
Shesua we're teaching us is also. We wouldn't have known it from Parsha Shmini. The Ra, we wouldn't have known. If somebody calls the bird by that name, Ra, you wouldn't know that it's also. And again, it says that. It's a kite or a vulture or some such creature, some such bird of prey. Anyway, the point is, so therefore, on the face of it, So on the face of it, therefore, the word gomel repeated in Parshas Re'eh is not meant to teach us any drasha. It's just part of that whole parsha that was repeated, where the shesua is the chiddush over there, and everything else is just along for the ride. You can repeat the whole parasha, you can repeat a whole section because of one chiddush that's being given the second time it's repeated again. So why are we saying we can learn something from the extra gomel? The answer is okay, but even so, kol heichal de'ikal midrash darshinan. Whenever we have a repeated section like that, and we're able to darshan something from it, we should do that. We shouldn't assume, we know it's repeated because of the shesua and because of the ra. Nevertheless, whatever details we can find in there that in addition we can find the drasha for, we should. And gomel is an example of that. So we can't find the drosha for the shofar and the arneves and the chazir that they repeated. Okay, we can't find the drosha for that. They're just along for the ride. But at least we can find for gomel. And then, by the way, the only reason why we're doing from gomel is because it happens to be the first one on the list. In other words, the limud could have equally well been learned from any of the four of them. But because gomel was first on the list, then therefore the first of the four animals that have only one siman that have only one siman kara and that are repeated. Yeah. Okay, so therefore, so that's what it is. So the rest of the parasha is indeed repeated, not specifically to learn anything from it, but just because we have the shesua and the raw. However, given that we have the extra time gomel and we are able to darshan something from it, then we do that. According to Reb Shimon, that a gomel born from a para is also, and according to the chachamim, that the milk of a gomel is also.
Can you derive this from using
that? That's what we said before. We said before we would have thought that milk of a kosher animal itself is a bit of a chiddush that you're allowed to drink it, and we had to bring psukim to show that we are. So maybe you are allowed to drink milk of non-kosher animals as well, and that's why we needed a limud to the kosher. We said that's what the Gemara was saying. Yes, we said yesterday. You would have thought to begin with that you can't drink any milk, but you're saying that you have psukim that imply that you're allowed to drink milk. And eat cheese and whatever. Therefore, you would think it already applies to non-kosher animals as well. And therefore you have to have gomel or esek gomel to tell us more.
Yeah, but that's telling you that it doesn't apply to non-kosher animals.
Telling us, in other words, that the rule of hayosim and atome. Fine, but it's not for them. That's fine. What is that a rule of anything?
Because you could say the milk of the kosher animal should be kosher.
Okay. Not automatically. We had to bring silk in for it. That's why we had the discussion before. Next, getting back to the matter of nidya, which was the main focus of our sugya, we digressed to talk about this whole matter of milk. So getting back to the matter of nidya, of a baby animal that looks like a different species than the mother. So tana rabbanan, rochel sheyol de min eiz, if a female sheep gives birth to you, gives birth to something that looks like a goat, the eiz sheyol de min rochel, or a female goat gives something that looks like a sheep, p'tura min ha-bechora. So we said the baby is potter from bechora, as we've been saying all along. V'im yesh be mikta simonim chayavet, but if it has some of the simonim of its mother, in other words, it partially resembles the mother's species, then it's chayav. Reb Shimon Oma Abshi Ehi Lo Shev Rubo Jomi Le'imai. Reb Shimon says it's not enough if it has mikta simonim. It would have to be that the head and most of its body resembles the mother. So according to him, if let's say the head and most of the body resembles the mother, and let's say, for example, the back legs resemble a different species, then fine, it's chayav in bechora. But any less than that, it would be bother. So, iboilohu, so now we have a question. La'achila miboy Reb Shimon Rosh Rubo Eloi. What about when it comes to the din of being able to eat the animal? Reb Shimon, who said before that, we said at the top of the Amud, that Reb Shimon says that if a kosher animal gives birth to a nidmeh that appears to be a non-kosher animal, like a gomel, Reb Shimon learned from the extra time gomel that you're not allowed to eat it. So what are Reb Shimon's criteria for saying when you're allowed to eat it? When it comes to being able to eat the animal, would Reb Shimon say, by the same thing as Bechora, that it has to resemble the mother's species in the head and most of the body, and only then would you be allowed to eat it, even if, let's say, the back legs look like a camel? Or maybe not. Maybe he would say that even if it only has mitzvah simonim less than that, it would be much.
For the mother, we know, but we're not.
No, not for the mother, we know. For Bechora, we know. The question is for you.
For the Bechora?
Yeah. Litinian Bechora Ksiv, the logic is like this. When it comes to Bechora, the pasuk says, Ach Bechoshur, however, a Bechor of an ox, and we said before, that means Ad Shehu Shur of Bechora Shur. We said Rabbi Yisrael Guri learned from that it meant that the mother and the baby both have to be a Shur. So therefore, in that case, if it doesn't, so therefore, Reb Shimon would argue that if Rosh and Rubai don't resemble a shur, then it can't be considered a shur. Avalachila, but when it comes to eating the baby, you could argue, Gomelu da'amar rahmana da'asir, you could argue that only if it looks completely like a camel would the Torah say it's da'asir. Ha ishtanimi gomel shapir dummy, but if it's partially not like a camel, even if it's only a minority of the body, shapir, maybe shapir dummy, then it would be fine. Maybe
meaning less than right.
Meaning less than right. Or maybe there's no difference. Maybe the same criteria would hold true for eating it as well, where according to Reb Shimon, it has to have Rosh of the Rubai, and otherwise it's considered a camel. So, Toshma, Behema Tahora Shiyodam Min Behema Tzmeya. We learn in a Braita that if a Behema Tahora gives birth to something that looks like a Behema Tzmeya, also Bachila, so it's also to eat. Now, who is the one who says that? Necessarily, that's Reb Shimon. The Chachamim would disagree and say, anyway, it's Motzuti. But the Braisa continues, the Imjoma Rosh of a Ruby Limoi, but if its head and most of its body resemble the mother, Chayav the Bechorah, then it is Chayav in Bechorah. So we assume that we assume Shmami Nalachi the Nami Boyer of Shimon Rosh of a Ruby. Presumably, the fact that the Braisa begins by talking about eating it, by Osav Achila, and then continues Chayav the Bechorah, implies that the same rules would apply to both. That for both eating and for b'chayra, Rav Shimon would say, unless it's a Rosh HaVeruvah, like the mother, then it's not chayv b'chayra, and it's also to eat. This is why the b'chayra doubts, but not necessarily. Maybe the Rosh HaVeruvah part is only as far as the din of b'chayra. Maybe Rav Shimon would say, the other way around. Meaning, if it has less than Rosh HaVeruvah resembling the mother, Rav Shimon might say it's mutter to eat, but it's possible from b'chayra. Only if it's Rosh HaVeruvah resembling the mother, then it would be Chayav B'Chorah.
It's Chayav B'Chorah, but it has more than
Rosh,
would it be Mutar
B'Achila? If it's Chayav B'Chorah of necessity, it's Mutar B'Achila, sure, because then it means according to Rosh HaVeruvah, it has Rosh HaVeruvah. If it's Rosh HaVeruvah look like the mother, then there's no question it's Mutar B'Achila, even according to Rosh HaVeruvah. The question is, would he accept that it's Mutar B'Achila, even if it's less? Maybe the Braisa is mentioning Rosh HaVeruvah only as far as Bechorah. And in fact, Gekanami, and in fact, you could infer that from the wording of the Braisa, because after all, the Braisa began by talking about eating, but then it set that aside, become Le'a Bechorah, and continues talking about Bechorah. It didn't say that if the Rosh HaVeruvah are like the mother with mutter to eat, which seems to imply that for eating, you have a more lenient standard. So Shmamina, so therefore, Shmamin ol b'chora who debarred of Shimon Rosh HaVeruvah. So on the contrary, you can prove from this braisa that only as far as b'chora does Reb Shimon require it to have Rosh HaVeruvah like a mother, avol achil aloy. But as far as eating, maybe not. So on the contrary, this braisa. So we brought this braisa arguing that to say that Reb Shimon would say the same rules are for b'chora and for achila. Maybe on the contrary, maybe by looking carefully at the wording of the braisa, we can see he only holds his din as far as b'chora, not as far as achila. Because it starts by Achila and then it abandons that and starts talking about Bechorah.
So the last part of the Braisa
talks about Bechorah. So therefore we say, when do you need Rosh HaVeruvah? Only by Bechorah. The answer is loy. No, not necessarily is that a valid inference from the Braisa. Maybe after all, Rav Shimon is saying that you need Rosh HaVeruvah in order to eat it as well. Rosh HaVeruvah resemble a camel, even if a meal to it does not, then he would say it's also to eat. Then it would be the Rav Shimon would still say it's also. So then why does the second part of the Braisa talk about Bechorah and not talking about Achila? So we would need it, Istrich, because otherwise you would think like this. If it didn't talk about Bechorah in the second half, it only talked about Achila, you wouldn't necessarily deduce that the same thing applies to Bechorah. You would think to say, given that the Pasuk says only a Bechorah of an ox, and that means Adshie who shur of Bechorah shur. We said before that means that it has to be the mother is a shur and the baby is a shur. So on the contrary, you could think maybe that even Rosh HaVeruvah being similar to the mother is not enough. Maybe the whole thing has to look like a shur in order to be chayav b'chorah. Kamash Malani, you could argue that that's why the Braisa mentions b'chorah. So we were assuming, just to tell you that you don't need the whole thing. We were thinking that the Braisa is distinguishing Achila, you don't need Rosh HaVeruvah, Bechorah, you do, but maybe the Chiddush and the Braisa is the other way around. Bechorah, it's enough to have Rosh HaVeruvah, you don't need the whole thing. But maybe Achila, you also need the whole thing. Maybe you also need Rosh HaVeruvah for Achila, according to Shimon. So no proof one way or the other. Okay. Tashma, another Braisa says, the Pasuk says, Achat zeloi tzoklu mimale agera umimafrite aparsa. However, these you're not allowed to eat from among the animals that chew their cud and have split hooves. Now, the word and the pasuk continues. The first one it mentions on the list is the camel, implying zeh iyat, and Hagot Habach adds that, et agomel. So therefore, zeh iyat oichel. So the implication is that you're not allowed to eat this one, a camel-like creature that's born from a cow. And again, that would necessarily be a form of Shimon, because the Chachamim would disagree with that. But the word zeh is a mute. After oichel abob is simen echad. However, you are allowed to eat a creature that has one simen. Now, one simen, usually we would assume that one simen means it's either malagera or it's machris parsa. Rashi over here doesn't say distinctly one way or the other, but there are other places in Shas, where in Bava Kamma, for example, Rashi explains that it actually does mean one simen, chews its cud or has split hooves when it's born from a polla. Tosfos over here disagrees with that and says that no, simen echad doesn't mean over here one simen of tara, it means that in some ways it resembles a mother. In other words, for example, that its legs are shaped like it, or its wool is like it, or whatever, even if it doesn't have simen of tara. Right.
Is that the
halacha? Well, wait. First of all, we're talking only here according to Rav Shimon.
Right.
According to the Chacham, it doesn't matter. As long as it's born from a Torah animal, it's Torah, period. Okay. So, avolat ha'ochel abob a simen echad, but you're allowed to eat a creature that comes with one simen, meaning a Tosfos is saying, like, it only a slight resemblance to the mother. The ezezeh, and what kind of creature are we talking about? The ezezeh abob a simen echad. The ezezeh abob a simen echad. What is this creature that comes with only one simen? Zeh tomeh hanolad min ha'tahor v'ibodim min ha'tahor. This is a tomeh creature that is born, meaning that on the face of it, it has no simone tira, which is born from a Tahar mother, the Ibure Min HaTahar, and the mother was impregnated by a Tahar animal. So then, the Braisa is saying, even according to Reb Shimon, you would be allowed to eat that. Well, we don't know, actually. We don't know. It's according to Reb Shimon. We're going to establish soon. This is a Braisa so far. We don't know who it is, but we're going to talk about soon. We're going to try to prove that this Braisa goes according to Reb Shimon. Continues the Braisa, you would think that the same din would apply even if the mother was impregnated by a tomei species. Now, what do you mean a kosher species mother being impregnated by a non-kosher species father? We're going to talk about soon. On the face of it, that can't happen. So we'll get to that soon. We'll see. So let's first finish the Braisa first. Tamud lema seik sovim v'seizim. Therefore, to forestall that, the Pasuk tells us, the Pasuk uses the expression that you're allowed to eat seik sovim v'seizim, a sheep or a goat, meaning, and the plural, sovim and izim, means adshiyehi imay keves, oviv keves v'imay kivsa, divir Rabbi Yeshua. The father and the mother of this baby both have to be sheep. They both have to be kosher animals in order for the baby to be allowed to be eaten. If the father was not kosher, and we'll discuss soon what that means, then Rabbi Yeshua would say the baby is not kosher to you. Rabbi Eliezer, then Rabbi Eliezer says, no. Loy bar kosev lahaftir is a mutter. The pasuk, after all, doesn't have to come to tell us that something that would already be mutter is mutter. Obviously, if the mother and father are both tahor, then you don't need a pasuk to tell us that you're allowed to eat it. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says it must be coming to add to something that you wouldn't have otherwise known as mutter, and now you're being told is mutter. The Eza there. So what is this case? This refers to an animal that means it's born from the mother. It's a tome creature, like a camel or whatever, hanolad min ha-tahor, which is born from a tahor mother, v'ibure min ha-tome, but the mother was impregnated by a tome animal. That even in that case, Rabbi Eliezer would say, as long as the mother was tahor, it doesn't matter who the father was. Oy eina el ibure min ha-tahor, maybe not, continues Rabbi Eliezer, maybe not, maybe the pasuk is only allowing you to eat the baby if the mother was impregnated by a tahor. I'm sure steak seven, but they easily call Malcolm. That is why the pasuk mentions a sure steak seven, but they easily mean call Malcolm. Regardless where it comes from, regardless who the father was, Shitam Kubetz changes the gear cell a little bit. The fact that it says set twice means we don't care. We don't care who the father was, as long as the mother is Tahar, then we're good. So how does this Braisa relate to our discussion over here? We're trying to figure out Reb Shimon's opinion. Well, Kari le Tomei to Reb Shimon. Now, what do we see? Forgetting about the father and the mother for the moment, we're talking about the baby that was born, where it doesn't have split hooves. It's a kolut. It has rounded hooves. We're calling it Tomei. That must be like Reb Shimon. Because according to the Chachamim, there's no reason to call it Tahor. It has no simone Tahor. Only according to Reb Shimon are we calling it Tomei. Reb Shimon is the one who says before that if you have a camel-like creature born to a Parah, it's Aser. Well, that's what we're saying. Vikomer, and yet we see Aval Ata Ochel Abba Simen Echad. Yet we see the Braise is saying that even if it only has one simen, meaning that it only partially resembles the mother, then it's mutter. So therefore, that would answer our question. If Shimon would say, even if it only partially resembles the mother, much less than Rosh Hashanah, it would still be mutter. So that would be a proof.
We're using the conclusion that it's from Reb Shimon, but we don't know. It could be someone.
We have a good reason to say that this Braise is calling Reb Shimon, because otherwise, why is it calling the baby Thomas? Okay, but the answer is that's still not a valid proof, because high Tana Sovale Kavaste Bechoda or Polygale Bechoda. Because you could say the Tana of this Braisa agrees with Reb Shimon about the basic concept that a non kosher like animal, Nidme, is not kosher, but he disagrees on the amount. Exactly what Shimon would say. You need Rosh Hashanah, the Tana of this Braisa may say that a mort is enough. The Ika de Makshi or Moises. There's another version of how we arrive at the conclusion that this Braisa has to represent somehow the opinion of Reb Shimon. Before we were saying we're taking it from the fact that the Braisa calls the baby a tummy, and only according to Reb Shimon is that nomenclature valid, because according to Chachamim there's no reason to call it tummy. There's another way of reaching that conclusion by analyzing the Braisa in a different way. They start out with a question and then an answer, which once we get to the answer, then we'll see that the Braisa must be a coincidence. The question is, what do you mean? We're talking about the case where the Tahar mother was impregnated by a Tomei species. Mima Abra, would she become pregnant then? Didn't Rabbi Shurban Levi say, it never happens. A Tomei species of animal cannot be impregnated by a Tahar species. A Tahar one cannot be impregnated by a Tomei. A large animal, like cattle, can't be impregnated by a small animal, like sheep or goats. Voloi dakam in agasa, or vice versa. Voloi behema min chaya, voloi chaya min behema. And also domestic and wild animals are not interfertile. They can't. One second. Rabbi Shurban Levi, the Amora, is telling us facts. Chutz mir Rabbi Eliezer or machloik, except for Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim who disagree with him, shahoyu omrim chaya mitaberes min behema. They say, we learned in Chulin, we had a discussion about the koi. And we discussed there what the koi is, which is an animal which is sofet chaya, sofet behema. So is it a different species, a species that's neither chaya nor behema, or is it the result of a mating between a goat and a tzvi, which we said there was a gazelle?
Which is a chaya.
So therefore, Rabbi Yezer and the Chachamim would disagree with him about the dinim of a koi. They both hold that a koi is a crossbreed of goats and gazelles. So they hold that a chaya and a behema are fertile with each other. The other Chachamim disagree with that. And definitely everybody agrees that a tomei and a tahar are not interfertile. So how is it conceivable that we're talking about over here a tahar animal that was impregnated by a tomei animal? There's no such thing.
Even Rabbi Shimon would agree with that.
Yeah, that's a biological fact. That's a biological fact. Different families of animals of their different genuses, whatever species, have different numbers of chromosomes, and therefore, you know, if they're close enough, like horses and donkeys, fine, they can breed and produce mules. The same thing, sheep and goats can interbreed, but a goat and a cow are too different in chromosomal arrangement. And the same thing, for example, a horse and a cow or whatever, yeah. So it's impossible. The Amar of Yumiya, sort of Yumiya explains, what does the Braisa mean when it talks about the Tahar mother being impregnated by a Tomei creature? What it means is the Abami Kolot Ben Parah. It means that the father animal is one that Rav Shimon would consider to be Tomei, namely that it's a Kolot that was born from a Parah. Kolot meaning that it has unsplit hooves. Keep in mind, again, according to Rav Shimon, a nidme that doesn't have the simone tahara that was born to a kosher mother is not kosher, according to him, because it's like a camel. Mm-hmm. So therefore, now, however, the Chacham say it's fine, but we're talking according to Reb Shimon. So now, what are we talking about over here? Suppose that now, so you have generation one, you have a kolot was born. Reb Shimon says it's not kosher because even though genetically it's a para, because it doesn't have split hooves and it doesn't have simone tahara, therefore it's like a camel in that sense. Now let's say that animal is a male. Now let's say it mates with a female, a normal female that has split hooves, and the baby is and the baby is an, so now we can talk about if the baby is if the baby may also be a colic. The baby may have inherited this mutation of the father and also be a colic. But that he says that when you have the animal completely nidme to another species, not. But that's what we're trying to figure out. Would he say only if it's completely nidme, or would he say only if would he say if it's partially if it's partially not nidme, that's good. Or would he say that's Mirosh Virova? That's what we're in the middle of discussion. It, according to him, it has to be born from a kosher animal, it has to have at least some resemblance. Yeah.
A majority.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out, whether it has to have a majority or whether a minority is not. Anyway, the point is that when the Braita is talking about over here, Tomei hanolad min ha-tahor v'ibure min ha-tomei, what we mean is that you have a kolut which was born in the first generation, then it mated with a normal female para, and the baby was also a kolut. It inherited the same mutation. So now that's what the Braita is talking about, where Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are arguing what would be the din of that baby. Are you allowed to eat it or not? But this is only relevant all according to Rabbi Shimon. Only Rabbi Shimon would call a kolut a tamei.
Chachamim would agree.
The Chachamim would disagree with the whole concept. The Chachamim would say
that it would be kosher.
Right. So again, that's another proof, therefore, that this Braisa must be the Abam Kolot Ben Pora. So the Tomei, that's the Tomei whose mother was impregnated by the Tomei, means that you have a baby that appears to be Tomei, because it doesn't have split hooves, that was born from a mother that was impregnated by a father that also doesn't have split hooves, but it is genetically a pyre, therefore it doesn't violate our rule before about a Tomei and a Tahar not being able to interbreed. So there again, therefore, that shows the terminology shows therefore that it's coincident of Shimon. The Kamar, and again, the Braitha is saying Avalata Ochel Ababa Simenechad. Again, the Braitha is saying that you're allowed to eat the baby if it has Simenechad, if it only partially resembles the mother. So therefore, that would prove that Rav Shimon holds you allowed. And again, the answer is, like before, Hai Tana, Sovalei, Kavasei, Bechadu, Apolegalei, Bechadu. No, because we could say that the Tana only agrees with Rav Shimon about the basic concept of Nidme, about the basic concept of Nidme, right, but he disagrees on how much of it has to resemble, right? Okay, fine. Before we get back to figuring out Rav Shimon's opinion, First, let's figure out what Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are saying. Again, what do we have within Rabbi Shimon's opinion? Who holds that a kolot is not kosher? So you have in this braisa, you have Rabbi Yeshua saying that both parents have to be normal; they both have to have split hooves, and Rabbi Eliezer saying that even if only the mother has split hooves and the father doesn't, the father is a kolot. Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's allowed. So. So are you telling me that Rabbi Eliezer would hold that when you have two things that contribute to create a baby, where one of them is Osir and one of them is Mutter, that it would be Mutter, and Rabbi Yeshua would say that not. That's what Rabbi Eliezer on the face of it is saying, therefore, that you have one parent is Osir, according to Rabbi Shimon, and the other one is Mutter. The result is the baby is Mutter. But don't we find Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua saying the other way around? Namely, we have a case, Vlad Trefa, if you have a baby animal born to a Trefa mother, so either, we learned in Chulin, we had a sugya about this in Chulin, we actually had two different ways of explaining, was it a matter of Zev Zegorim, because we discussed over there the question, is a Trefa mother able to give birth? So either we're talking about that the mother was Trefa before she became pregnant, and then, so now she's also, the father is Mutter, now she was impregnated, and it's a case of Zevzegurim, or if we say Trefa any Eledis, which is Alocha, that a Trefa animal is not capable of conceiving and giving birth, then it would have to mean that we're talking about that she became a Trefa while she was pregnant with the baby. So then it's not really a nothing the matter at that point. She was kosher, the father was kosher. Later on she became a Trefa. So in that case, then it's not a matter of Zevzegurim, it's a question of whether Uber Yerachim. It's a question of when she became Trefa, is the baby considered Trefa at the same time? But here we're following the first possibility that we're talking about according to the possibility that Trefa Yeledes. Trefa meaning an animal that developed some kind of physical defect of the kinds that we learned about. Not Tomei, but Trefa, right. Okay, so anyway, so if we take the view So if we take the view that we're talking about that the that we're talking about that treifa yeladus, then this machlokus is relevant to that. If we say treifa any yeladus, then fine. Tosfos points out there are other places in Shas where we find that Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua argue and hold that Rabbi Eliezer holds zevah zegerim also. Anyway, so
the Pilate,
well, how is it relevant? Rabbi Eliezer, Pilate treifa again. We were talking zevah zegerim according to one way of looking at it. Rabbi Eliezer and the layuk of agadim is that. Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to bring it as a korban, and in fact, it's not only that he would say. Well, because he would say not only it's possible for a korban, but it's even possible to eat because zevah zegerim is also. Zevah zegerim. You have two factors that contribute to create something. One also, one mutter. Yeah. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, you have to have that both of them are mutter. Rabbi Yeshua, I mean, you could have the government there. Rabbi Yeshua says not only is the baby kosher, but you're even allowed to bring it as a korban.
Because
we don't care about zevah zegerim, we just focus on the mother, we just focus on the father in that case. Fine, choshen lezerav, and that way, and so we would say one thing that's gerim was the father, and that's
mutter. Both parents
would be both zevah zegerim means one parent is also one is mutter. In this case, the father is mutter. He's not treifa. The mother is treifa. So if we say zevah zegerim is mutter, then we're good.
If you say
Gerdim is mutter, then we're good, because then you have one Gerdim is mutter, and the fact that another Gerdim is also doesn't matter.
Okay.
Yeah. So the point is that usually Rabbi Eliezer holds Zev is that Gerdim is also. You have to have both factors on mutter for the product to be mutter. Rabbi Yeshua says it's enough if one factor is mutter. Here we seem to be saying the other way around. The answer
That's the question.
So the answer is Ba'almas Sover Rabbi Eliezer Zev Zegerim Osir. You're right. Usually Rabbi Eliezer holds Zev Zegerim Osir. You have to have both contributing factors have to be mutter for the product to be mutter. The shiny hacha, it's different over here. Ge'im Kein, because why does Rabbi Eliezer say it's enough over here if only the mother is mutter? Because Ge'im Kein, if you were going to say Zev Zegerim Osir, Nichtiv cross sake stopping the isn't. The pasuk didn't have to repeat the word say in connection with, stopping and isn't. Say is a generic term, we have it called in many times, it means animals from the flock, so it means equally well sheep and goats, but it could have just said sake stopping the isn't. It didn't have to repeat the word say. Say the say normally, why does it have to repeat the word sake stopping this say isn't? In fact, Shita Mukabesa points out, you don't even need the word sad, either need of sad, or just said show itself in the isn't. Why does it say twice there? In the same passage, show stakes of them, that these are the animals you're allowed to eat, show stakes of them the same. Shmamina semi komachim. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, the Torah is implying that this is an exception to the general rule. As long as this baby is a sad of some kind, even if the father was a kolot, which is also a coincidence of Shimon, as long as the mother was mutter, then you're good. As long as it has mitzvah siman. Yeah. Right. Vir of Yeshua Amalach, and Rabbi Yeshua would say, why do I say over here that Zev Zegerim is also, and normally I say it's mutter? Ba'alma Zev Zegerim mutter. Usually Zev Zegerim would be mutter. It's enough if only one of the two factors is mutter. Bahacha, but Rabbi Yeshua argues, in Cain, if it meant to be that it's mutter over here also, Lichtiv Krosh, Shur Ketev Va'ein. After all, the Torah, the word shur is singular. It could have said kesev v'eiz in the singular. Ksavim v'izim lomeli. Why does it say ksavim and izim in the plural? Implying shmamina ad sheh oviv keves v'ime kids. So the implication is that both parents have to be sheep, have to be things that would be considered sheep. La halacha, and again, according to Rav Shimon, that would mean they would both have to have split holes. So Zev Zegerim usually would be mutter, but in this case, because the pasuk itself is implying by the word Sovim and Izim, implies that they both have to be kosher. Okay. Fine. So that covers Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. The bottom line is the Braisa that we quote, the Braisa which mentioned their opinions, not necessarily does it agree with Rabbi Shimon about the amount of the baby that has to not be Nidme in order to be kosher. The Braisa is mentioning that if it has one simen, meaning it only partially resembles the mother, it's good. But maybe Rav Shimon would say that it has to resemble the mother in Rosh Hashanah in order to be kosher. So getting back to that, Toshma, Rav Shimon, another proof, Rav Shimon, Gomel, Gomel, Shnei Pamim. Here we have a Braisa explicitly in the name of Rav Shimon. When it says Gomel twice, Echad Gomel, another than a Gomel. One teaches us that a camel that's born from a camel mother is also the usual kind of camel. Ve'echad Gomel, another than a para. The other one teaches us that a camel-like creature is born to a cow, then it's also. But the Braita continues, Rav Shimon continues, the im roshe veruba joim le ima, but if its head and most of its body resemble the mother, mutar b'achila, then it's mutar to eat. Shmamina, that proves v'achila nami boi Rav Shimon roshe veruba. So there we clearly see that Rav Shimon requires it to have roshe veruba as far as to eat it as well. Shmamina, so that proves it.
That's a Braita.
That we go through all possibilities in it. Yeah.
And then we've got the
and if we didn't have that, we wouldn't have had it, but we wouldn't have quoted the Braita with Rabbi Eliezer and Yeshua. So it comes out, actually, therefore, it comes out at this point that we have four different opinions on the subject. You have the Chachamim say across the board, a Nidmeh is Mutter, even if it doesn't have any Simone Tara. We have Rav Shimon saying across the board, even if it's completely Nidmeh, even if it looks completely like a camel, as long as it was born to a kosher mother, to a parah mother, then we're good. That's the halacha. We have Rav Shimon saying that just the opposite. If it's Nidmeh, then to a camel, then it's also to eat, unless Rosh HaVirubai look like a mother. Then we have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shua take a middle position. They hold that even if it only resembles the mother in a minority, but then it would be mutter. But what do you need in order for it to be mutter? According to Rabbi Yeshua, you need that both parents have simon etara, and according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's enough if only the mother has simon etara. No, the Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua tonight. That's tonight. Okay. So those are the four opinions. Now Lacha is like a chachamim that either way is mutter. Then we said in the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that the general rule is anything that comes from a Tomei animal is Tomei, and anything that comes from a Tohar animal is Tohar. So, Bomi name
is... Does that apply to humans also?
So we said yesterday, humans are not, the according to the Rambam, at least humans' flesh is only also as an Isser Esser, because the Torah tells us Zoyta Chaya Shetoichu, when it lists the simonim that a creature has to have in order to be kosher, implying that anything that doesn't have them is not kosher, and human beings don't have them. Therefore, you have a lava, Bamitzol Esther, which has the force of an Esther, that therefore you're not allowed to eat human flesh. And therefore, when it comes to drinking human milk, again, there's no Isser on it, you just can't drink it directly from the breast, as the Gemara tells us in the Sukkos. In other words, the human being is not considered Tom in that sense. Okay. So, Bomi named Rav Sheshet. They asked Rav Sheshet the question as follows. May Raglayim Shel Chamor Mahu. Is the urine of a donkey mutter? Is it mutter to drink? Yeah. So the question is, why are you asking about a donkey? No. What makes him ekdash? Oh, you're talking about, no, they wouldn't even bring in any urine if they're covered. No, we're talking about over here to drink. So the question is, why are we only asking about from donkeys? Why aren't we asking about urine from horses or camels as well? The answer is, when it comes to horses and camels, there's no question that you would be allowed to drink them, because they're not turbid, they're clear liquids. Therefore, they don't resemble milk in any way. Therefore, you can say Maya ul Maya Nofok. Okay, so the animal drank water and then it excreted water. The water didn't change in any significant way. And halacha, that should make it also. It wouldn't be considered yosim in a tamay, in other words.
It's not considered like coming from water.
Well, that's because for the most part, since it's clear, then basically it's the same water that came in. Tikam boiler who the chamar. The question is only specifically about a donkey's urine. The achiri, where a donkey's urine is turbid, it's cloudy. The domu l'cholav, and it resembles milk. It looks whitish. I've never seen donkey urine, but I guess if you raise donkeys, and you know that. Scheinzaltz points out that there's a lot of calcium carbonate in there. That's what makes it look white. Okay. Why it would be that donkeys excrete more of that than any other creature? Basically. Anyway, the point is, so it resembles milk. Nice. So now we have to ask a question. Does that mean, therefore, that the urine is considered that it's an actual byproduct of the body? The fact that it has so much, the fact that it has so much cloudiness and dissolved stuff in it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, vasiri. Therefore, it would be also like anything else that comes from a tame animal. Or maybe you could say it's the same thing. It's basically the same water that it drank is the same water that's coming out. And the only reason why it's cloudy, it's only because of the heat and the smelliness, Rashi says, of the flesh. Maybe in other words, that discolors it, but it's not necessarily. It's not intrinsically something that's considered to come from a byproduct of the body. Hevel literally means the heat.
Hevel?
Yeah, hevel, like the heat, the odor or whatever, yeah, the body. Maybe that causes it to become cloudy and then whitish like that. Okay. So what would it mean? Amar Rav Shesh is kinisua. Well, Rav Shesh says, look, Yavon Mishnah says, Shai yotze min ha-tomeh tomeh v'ayotze min ha-tahar tar. Now, mi tomeh loika omer. Now, the Mishnah did not use the expression, the shorter expression, ha-yotze mi tomeh. Instead it says, elam min ha-tomeh. And therefore, we understand the word min to have a double meaning. It doesn't just mean min as in from the tomeh. It means v'hainami mina de tomeh. Anything that is the min of the tomeh, anything which is of the same species as the tomeh is also. In this case, it looks like milk. So therefore, in that sense, it's min ha-tomeh. It's in that sense, it's like milk from the donkey. Milk from the donkey is definitely also, because we learned before, from gomel or esa gomel. This is the same min because it looks similar to it. Therefore, yes, it's also also.
Like the milk is also?
Like the milk is also, so is the urine. Yeah. The Ikadami, another version of the discussion goes like this. In the first version, we were saying it's a given that urine from horses or camels would be mutter because it's basically just the same water that went in the first place. And the question was only on donkey urine. Now, in the second version, when it came to horses or camels, they didn't bother asking the question, because nobody drinks them anyway. Therefore, they have no reason to ask about it. The reason they were asking specifically about donkey urine, because sometimes people do drink it, and it's good for jaundice. Therefore, it's disgusting. Yeah, but in those days, you know, it wasn't like you could go to the pharmacy and get pills for the purpose. So again, you know, you had to make do with what. Yeah. So the question is mild. So according to the second version. According to the second version, maybe indeed urine from any non-kosher animal is also, and the only reason they're asking about donkey's urine is because it was used as a medicinal thing. So what would be the din? Amar Rav Sheshes. And again, in the second version, Rav Sheshes tells them, Tinisua, we learned in our Mishnah, Hayotim and Atome, Tome, Vayotim and Atahotar, whatever comes out from a Tome is Tome, whatever comes out from a Tahotar, Vahainami, Mitome, Kaosi. Well, this urine comes from a Tome creature, therefore, so even, in other words, Rashi learns, even if we were to say, like we said before, that there's no byproducts of the body in there, nevertheless, it would be also. In the first version, we were assuming that a horse urine or camel urine would be mutter because it's clear, and therefore it's basically the same water that went in. It's not considered something that comes out of the body. In the second version, Rav Sheshes is telling them, no. When the Mishnah says, I yoke them and I tome tome, it means across the board. Whether it has byproducts of the body in it or not, it came out of the body of a non-kosher animal, therefore it's not kosher, meaning horses and camels urine would also be also.
But if we're using now yotzim and atar and yotzim and atar, why we didn't use it for milk?
Because again, we argued that yotzim and atar tome doesn't necessarily mean that everything that comes from a tahar is mutter. Look, blood comes from a tahar and you're not allowed to eat it, right?
But we're saying here
yotzim and atar tome is across the board yotzim and atar. There would be exceptions to not everything that comes from a tahar is mutter. Chaylev is also, dam is also. Yeah. Okay. So according to the second version, you would actually have that all urine from non-kosher animals is also. The actual halacha in Shulchan, now,
you can drink the milk.
Yeah, we already discussed that.
Okay.
For the third time, human beings are not considered tamei. I don't know why you have a being in the animals, you can talk about tamei or tahor.
Right.
Human beings are not considered tamei.
Okay.
Well, then that's that.
Okay,
are you allowed to use human chaylev?
Not human chaylev, animal chaylev.
Obviously not. Hayotim and atomei tome, hayotim and atahor jar doesn't mean everything that comes from a tahor animal you're allowed to eat. Obviously there are exceptions. Okay. Now, so it's interesting. It's interesting the opinions of the poskim on this then. So you have two different versions in the Gemara over here. And you know, you have another way of looking at it. There are other ways of understanding this Gemara also. When we said that horse and camel urine we're not asking about because nobody drinks them, do we mean therefore, in other words, it was a given that would it mean that once we have an answer to the chamor, automatically it covers them as well? Or would we say, nevertheless, we could still argue that the donkey's urine is also because people do sometimes drink it medicinally, whereas the horse and camel urine is not also because it would be considered pir shabam, it would be considered waste, a waste product from the body. you actually end up with three different opinions among the poskim what the dinim on these are, and they haven't shown up. The first opinion, which is according to the Rosh and another Rishonim, is that all urine from non-kosher animals is also. Whether horses, whether camels, whether junkies, all of them are also, based on Rav Sheshet's second, on the second version of Rav Sheshet. And based on the assumption that when we say that we didn't ask about horse and camel just because nobody drinks them anyway, but once we have the answer to donkey urine, that it's also, even though it's used medicinally, then the other ones are also also. Then you have the Mechaber brings the opinion of the Rambam that all of them are mutter. The Rambam just says generically that urine of non-kosher animals is mutter. He doesn't distinguish between donkeys and other creatures. And then the Shach brings there that from the Beit Yosef, another Rishonim that say why what's the logic? We just said, and we're saying in our Gemara over here, there's definitely a reason to ask a donkey urine because it looks like milk. So that's last question. So the Shach brings from the Mordechai that says that who takes the middle view. The other ones would be also donkey urine. If a person is drinking it for refuah, then it would be allowed. Actually, what the Shach brings over here is he brings from the Bach who says that the Mordechai would allow it for a cholish and besakana, but actually he says if you look at the actual Mordechai, it seems the other way around. So maybe there's a typo in what the Bach wrote. Whatever. Anyway, the point is that you have three different opinions among the poskim. You have the majority opinion that it's all osur. The Rambam, the Rambam seems to be saying that they're all mutter, and the third opinion that some are osur and some are mutter,
which is from
the Mordechai.
When did he get the Mordechai?
He lived in the time of the Rosh. Okay.
In Spain?
No, in Germany.
Okay.
Okay, okay. You might as well have a contradiction on what Rav Sheshet is saying. Rav Sheshet is telling us that anything that was in a non-kosher animal's body is also, even if it doesn't have any actual byproducts of the body in it. That's why he's saying, at least according to the understanding of most of the Mephoshim, of most of the Rishonim. And that's why he's saying that all urine of non-kosher animals is also, even if it's clear. So the question is, the Braita says, why did the Chachamim tell us that bee honey is mutter?
It's not clear.
That's the question. The reason is because machnuses oisa the gufon ve'in mamasas oisa mi gufon, because they only collect it in their body. They don't actually exude anything from their bodies into it. What do? They collect nectar and enzymes in their bodies, changing into honey. So there's no actual.
They push it out, don't they?
They take in the nectar. They put it into their honey sac, which is a separate component in their body,
right.
And enzymes over there turn it into honey. And then they
excrete it.
What?
The honey is excreted out.
Not excreted. It's not excreted from the back end. It's they throw it up, basically. They basically throw it up out of the sack. The point is, there you have something that comes from a non-kosher creature, that comes out of the body of a non-kosher creature, and it's kosher. So what Rav Sheshet do with that? The answer is, Huda Amakir of Yaakov. Rav Sheshet would say, I hold a coin to Rav Yaakov. It's not a matter of that the bees don't excrete anything into the honey. It's rather, Rabbi Yaakov says, it's just very psychotic. The reason why bee honey is mutter is because you have a pasuk in the Torah that says that it's mutter. Yeah, very psychotic. The Tanya, Rabbi Yaakov, as we learn in a Braita, so Rabbi Yaakov. What do you mean? The first Braita is saying there's a logical reason why it's mutter, because there's nothing of the bees themselves in it. It's basically just the nectar from the flowers. And Rav Yaakov is saying even if there is something of the bees in it, it's still mutter because there's a kosher. So Rav Sheshet would say normally something that comes out of a non-kosher animal is osur. That's why the urine is osur, even if there's nothing from the animal itself in it, even if it's the same water that came in and the same water that goes out. Honey is an exception only because there's a kosher. When the pasuk says achat zetochu mikol sheretz ha'ariv, the pasuk says, however, this you may eat from any of the winged, from any of the flying insects. And the pasuk goes on to list the various kinds of locusts that you're allowed to eat. So implying, again, the word zeh is in mute. Zeh after oichel, implying this you're allowed to eat. The e after oichel sheretz oich tome, but you're not allowed to eat non-kosher flying insects. So the question is, what do you mean? Sheretz oich tome, bad yipsin. What do you mean? The pasuk itself explicitly says you're not allowed to eat them. So you don't need a limud from the word zeh. El or no. What Rabbi Yaakov means is, sheretz oich tome, e after oichel, what it means is, what's produced by a sheretz oif tome, you're not allowed to eat. Avalata oichol masha oif tome masha. No, sorry. Sheretz oif tome yata. So you're not allowed to eat the actual insect itself, which is a non-kosher flying insect. Avalata oichol masha oif tome masha. However, you're allowed to eat something that a non-kosher insect produces, which is not something of itself, namely honey. The azes that dvash dvorim, namely bee honey. So therefore, in other words, you have an explicit thing in the pasuk that says that you're allowed to eat honey. So nothing to do with whether there's anything, according to Rabbi Yaakov, nothing to do with whether there's any byproducts of the bee itself in there. Even if it had byproducts of the bee, it would be mutter on the basis of that, but that wouldn't extend to other things.
How do we know it only goes to birds?
That's the question. Yochol af dvash agozin vatsirin. You would think maybe it should also apply to honey or honey-like secretions from gazin and sirin. Rashi translates gazin as a type of locust. The Oruch says it may be some other subspecies of bee, like maybe bumblebees or whatever. Yeah, that's sirin or of sirin, which again Rashi says min arba, and it could also be that they're like wasps or whatever. Anyway, the point is, how do we know that it doesn't include those as well? Omar to lo, so you say no. The fact is, you're not allowed to eat those. Umara isa la rabbis dvorim lahoita gazin ba sirin. So why are you including bee honey and excluding gazin and sirin honey?
What does it mean,
Omar to lo? You say the answer is no. The answer is dvasha gazin ba sirin is not mutachi. So the question is, why not? Now, Mephoshim explained, the point is, given that you only have one thing that you're adding, then the point is, you only have one thing that you can add. So that means you're only adding one thing. But how do we know that one thing should be honey? Maybe it should be one of the others. The logic is, we're going to include bee honey is going to be mutter. Because it doesn't have a secondary name. People just call it honey. People don't normally call it bee honey. They just call it honey. And more logically, we would exclude gazin honey and sirin honey because they have a secondary name. You have to distinguish them by calling them gazin honey or sirin honey.
We just say honey.
Period. So according to Rabbi Yaakov, you have a limud from the pasuk that you're allowed to eat honey, bee honey specifically. So therefore, we don't care for that purpose whether the bees actually excrete something into it or not. Either way, it would be mutter, gzeres akosu. And Rabbi Sheshes can be following that. Therefore, he says, only in that case is it mutter. When it comes to the urine of the various non-kosher animals, you don't have that exception. Therefore, it's going to be also. Whereas according to the previous Tana, we said the reason why bee honey is mutter, we didn't say who it was just an anonymous price. So the reason why bee honey is mutter, it's not an exception to the rule, it's rather because there's nothing in it from the bees themselves. It's just nectar that was turned into honey by it.
So maybe that Tana would allow
the urine of the at least the clear urine. That might be a basis for the Rambam's opinion that they're mutter. Keman Ozla, Hodatanya, what about who does it follow? This that it says in a Braisa, Dvasha Gazin Vasirin Tahr, honey from Gazin and Sirin is Tahr, because it doesn't have Tumas Oichlin, because it's not normally meant to be eaten, so therefore only if you had a Machshava to eat it would it have Tumas Oichlin, as we learned to call it. Mutar Bachila, however, you are allowed to eat it. So that would have to be the loiker of Yaakov. That would have to be not according to Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov is saying that we're not including honey of gazin and sirin. So this braisa that says that you are allowed to would have to be a different opinion. Okay. So the question is, tahar alma boi machshava. So we're saying that it's tahar, implying that in order for it to be makabel, in order for it to have tumas oichlin, it would require machshava. You'd have to specifically think that you're going to eat it, which is not the case with regular honey. With bee honey, no machshava is needed, because by default it's food. So therefore, Tanya Nami Hafi, and indeed, we learn a braisa to that effect. Dvash b'kavarte mekame tumas elchon shalom machshav. Honey, when it's in the comb, is mekame tumas in the hive. Regular bee honey is mekame tumas elchon while it's in the hive. Shalom machshav, and you don't need any special machshav on it. So if the source of tumah touches it, then it becomes then tumah. And the point is, since we're using the expression b'kavarter in its hive, of necessity, we have to be talking about bee honey, because gazin and sirin don't live in hives.
How do we know that?
We know, because if we know what gazin and sirin are, then we know they don't live in hives. So if we're mentioning dvash b'kavarter, of necessity, we have to be talking about bee honey. So therefore, that shows us what we just said, that bee honey doesn't require machshava. However, the other ones would require machshava in order to be matamah to masochim. Again, according to Rabbi Yaakov, they're anyway also cheap. Okay. Next, how about another byproduct of an animal? As if we didn't have enough yet for talking about the urine, we have something also fairly disgusting. But still, you know, Torah heva luminani sort of, it's still all part of Torah. Okay. Choli di yachmurta. What about the ball shaped things from a yachmurta? Now a yachmur is a creature, it's a kosher animal. The general understanding, it's something from the deer family. The general understanding is that it's a creature that's called in English fallow deer. So it's from the same general family as deer, but it's a different species. Anyway, yachmurta would be a female one, and sometimes you have ball shaped things that come out of its womb. Sovereign Abanan Lamein, Rabbeinu, so that Abanan thought to say that those must be testicles from the male, therefore Vasirim, so they'd be also as Eva Menachai. In other words, they assumed that what happened is when the male mates with the female, sometimes they base them get ripped off and they get lodged inside the womb, and therefore now when they fall out later, then they're Eva Menachai, or Boss Menachai, whatever, therefore they'd be also to eat. Amar of Safra, but Rav Safra told them no. Actually, Zara da'ilam. What it is these balls that come from the yachmur's womb are actually congealed semen from the male ayil. An ayil is a deer or gazelle or some other similar kosher animal. So what is it? The other an ayil is keep in mind you have ayil and you have ayol. Ayil is a ram. Ayol is some kind of wild animal, a deer or a gazelle or an ibex or some other. In Aramaic, it's ayla.
Ram is what?
In Aramaic, the ram is different.
Different.
So it's completely different. So zara the ayla. This is the seed. These ball-shaped things that fall out of the yachmur's, out of the female yachmur's womb, they are hardened semen from the aisle. The other buffalo yalta, what happens is when he's in heat, he follows the female aisle to mate with her. But the Aydi de Rachmatsar, but the female aisle's womb is very narrow, which the Gemara mentions in a few other places in Chas. Loim is dafka, so therefore it's not in the mood, it doesn't want to mate with the male. But also bossa yachmurta, so therefore the ayol wants to mate with something, so he goes to the female yachmur, which is a closely related species, so he'll mate with her instead. The natri, and then the result is that he pours a lot of semen into her, and therefore some of it hardens and some of it falls out. So that's what these egg-shaped things are. So therefore, in other words, the implication is that they're mutter to eat. Because they're mutter to eat because they came from her, they well, they're not Eva Menachai, and the point is also, now, we've been talking about how Yotzim and Tahar, but we still have rules about it. Not everything that Yotzim and Tahar is Tahar, unless we have a pasuk to that effect, like we did with milk, and like Tosafot said elsewhere, like we have about eggs. So where do we have a source for this, to say that's mutter? So one idea is, Mephoshim point out, it's considered perish, basically. It's considered like waste. So that makes it mutter, yeah. With the urine before, we were talking about the only reason it's also is because it came from non-kosher animals. If it came from kosher animals, it might be mutter.
This is non-kosher animal?
No, the ayol and the yachmur are both kosher animals. Yes, in the list of kosher wild animals in Parshas Re, you have ayol with tzvi v'yachmur, are the first three on the list.
So the yachmur
is the female. She's the one who casts off these ball-shaped things. The male ayol is the one who produced them in the first place.
Okay.
Okay. Next, another din in this connection, Amar Avuna, Ur Haba Keneged Ponav Shel Chamor, the skin that comes out when a donkey is born, that comes out in front of his face. The Rashi describes it's like the amniotic sac that the baby is born in. Because a chamor is more commonly born within that, usually with most other animals, it breaks through it. But also because here we're talking about a chamor, because you're allowed to eat it. My time of pirsha ba'alma, who again is considered pirsha ba'alma, it's just considered waste. It's not considered something that it's not considered yosim and atome, because it's not something that would normally ever be. So therefore, you would be allowed to eat it if you so desired. You might have an issue of bal tashaktu on eating it, and actually in connection, bal tashaktu means the Torah tells us you're not allowed to do things that are disgusting. Like, for example, you're not allowed to eat from dirty plates or whatever. In fact, actually, in connection with the whole urine business before, the Shach points out, even if you were to argue with Mutter, you still have the bal tashaktu issue. So unless you're doing it for medicinal purposes, then you still have a problem. Anyway, so one possibility is that this Ur Habak Neged Pnei Chamor is the amniotic sac. There's a different explanation that some of the Rishonim have. It's not quite the whole amniotic sac that sometimes you have, and you have it sometimes with human beings also, as the Gemara is going to say in a second. You have sometimes that a baby is born with like shreds of the sac on their face. In English, it's called a caul. So
they're always born with.
They usually break through the amniotic sac, and just the baby comes out, and the amniotic sac follows later. But sometimes you have it born with it. Sometimes you have it born with the whole inside the whole sac being intact. And sometimes you have, but shreds of it are on the face of the baby. So according to one explanation, that's what we mean, or a book and a ton of trauma. Okay. Amar Rav Chista, Tanya de Messiah, Rav Chista says, I have a braisa that supports your din, Rav Huna. A braisa says, that's Pirsha Bama. A braisa says, Ur habakeneg ponav shel adam, this skin, this amniotic sac, or this caul, or whatever, that comes in front of the face of a person when a person is born, when a baby is born, ben chai ben meis, whether it's alive or whether it's dead, tahor. Then it's tahor. It doesn't have tumas mes. So my love, ben hu chai ve'imei chaya, ben hu mes ve'imei mesa. Now, on the face of it, when we say whether it's alive or dead, it goes on both the mother and the baby. In other words, even if the mother died in childbirth and the baby is stillborn, the skin is still not metame. So therefore, in other words, that would prove what you're saying, that this amniotic sac or this caul or whatever is not essentially considered to be something from the mother or from the baby. It's considered pirsha ba'alma. It doesn't have any connection with either of them. Therefore, it's not metame. The answer is loy, not necessarily is that what the braisa means. Ben hu chai ve'imen meisa, ben hu mes ve'imen chaya. Maybe it means whether, if the baby is alive and the mother is dead or vice versa, then you say, in other words, then you could say that after all, then the braisa is saying that either way it's not matame, because if the baby is alive, then you consider it belong to the baby. If the mother is alive, you consider it to belong to the mother, but not necessarily. If they're both dead, whichever way you look at it, maybe it would be tame. So it's not necessarily a proof that it's Pirsha Ba'alma. Okay, but Bahatanya ben hu chai ve'imei chaya ben hu meis ve'imei meisa. A braisa clearly says that this din is true, that the amniotic sac is not metame, whether the baby is alive and the mother is alive, whether the baby is dead and the mother is dead. So that clearly shows that it's Pirsha Ba'alma. So he's okay, Tanya. Okay, so if you have a braisa to that effect, then good. We have a braisa to that effect, so yes. And that shows that it's considered Pirsha Ba'alma, and therefore, yes, in the case of a donkey's amniotic sac or caul, you would be allowed to eat it because it's considered Pirsha Ba'alma.
Because of this braisa,
which clearly says that in the case of a human baby, even if the baby and the mother are both dead, it's considered Pirsha Ba'alma. It's not considered to belong to either one of them, so therefore, So therefore, by the same thing with the chamor, it's not considered to belong to either the mother or the baby. Therefore, it's mutter. Yeah, pirsha ba'alma.